Hi, Patty.
Hi, how are you?
No, I'm virtually meeting here.
That's good. I've had several of those. They're always fun.
Yeah, better get used to it, I think.
Yep.
Okay, let's call this virtual meeting of Clallam PUD Commissioners to order for November the 23rd, 2020. And we'll start off with approval of the consent agenda, which I believe we had beforehand.
Yeah, unless there's any questions, I move that we approve the five line items of the consent agenda as presented.
I do have a question. Sean or Doug, the two actions to in there for pre-qualifying bids, have we always had that in the consent agenda? Or is, maybe we have, but I just wasn't sure if that had been a routine in the consent agenda to have those bid pre-qualifications in there as opposed to a separate issue.
No, Jim, those are actually always part of the consent agenda.
Okay. All right, thanks. Then I have, that's all I got.
Okay.
So I'll second. Did you make a motion, Dave?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
Okay, then I'll second it.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda for November the 23rd, 2020. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Hey, excuse me, Will. This is John. There is one part of the applications that may explain this. It has always been part of the consent agenda, but we do not always have things to present under that. It's much more less frequent than the other items.
Okay. You're just saying it doesn't always appear because we don't have anything to approve. In that, is that what you're saying?
Correct. So it's about one out of every three meetings, I would guess, we would have something to present for the pre-qualifications.
Okay. Thank you. Agenda revisions, do we have any?
Yeah. Well, I'd like to add agenda revision called basically, customer and commissioner comments on the draft 2021 strategic plan.
Okay, and that's under staff reports?
You can put that in a business item, second business item.
Okay, good. Okay, comments from the public. Sean, do we have?
Well, the only public here today is Patty, so unless she has anything, we can move on. Doesn't sound like she does, Will.
Okay, all right, good. All right, business items. We've got a resolution 2186-20 in appreciation for David Anderson for his service. And I'm going to present this, and I'm going to read it in its entirety. This is a resolution in appreciation for Commissioner David Anderson for his service to PUD No. 1 of Clallam County. Whereas Commissioner David Anderson's term is ending effective November the 24th, 2020, and whereas Commissioner Anderson has diligently committed his time, experience, and knowledge to serve as a PUD commissioner in completing the term left vacant by the resignation of Commissioner Hafner, and whereas Commissioner Anderson has been an invaluable asset in providing responsible and thoughtful governance, now therefore be it resolved that appreciation and recognition be extended to Commissioner Anderson for service provided to Clallam PUD and to the PUD ratepayers of Clallam County. And I make that motion. I won't read the passed portion since it hasn't been passed yet.
I'll second the motion.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to approve resolution in appreciation of Commissioner David Anderson's service, PUD No. 1, resolution number 2186-20. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. congratulations, Dave. We wish you all the best going forward.
Well, thanks very much.
Yeah, congratulations, Dave.
Thanks.
Okay, the next item was the edit item, customer comments on the strategic plan. Doug, you're going to do that one?
Yeah. I want to thank Dave, too, for all the help he's given in this last year, and wish him all the best, too. So thanks so much, Dave.
Thank you.
So what I have now is on October 13th, we posted the 2021 strategic plan on our website, and so it's been sitting there for a few months. And I've got a couple of comments from the public and a couple from commissioners. If we can go through that, I can discuss those. That would be great. Sean, you could let me share what I've got here.
You should be able to share now, Doug.
Okay. Let's see. Do I have to put share screen? Okay. And let me put that up there. So can you see that okay?
Not yet.
Okay. Is there anything I have to do for it after I put share screen?
You have to select the screen that you want to share by double-clicking on it.
Okay. Well, let me do this here. Does that show up anything?
Not yet.
Yeah, okay. Let me escape here and go back down to square one again. Oh, I see. It has to be one of these screens here, huh? There it is. Okay. You can see that now, right?
Yeah, we can see it now.
Okay, thanks. So some of the comments that came in, there was two individuals in particular that made some comments, and one had a number of comments on different things. Comment on, let me see, on our broadband, a comment on environmental responsibilities, and a comment on community engagement. And the customer was talking about, looked at a couple other utilities and saw some of the things they had and liked. And so you'll see as I go through this that we've added some of those from the good suggestions that we received. This first one, however, is a comment on the provide stable rates. This one was from the budget meeting. We had added a number of things to our strategic plan based on things that we're encountering, like the pandemic and the CETA compliance. So these two on provide stable rates, we added in number eight, we added where it said maintain sufficient cash reserve to address pandemic, weather, and disaster effects. So anything in green we added, and you'll see later in a minute, that yellow we've deleted or eliminated. So number nine, we added also create restrictive capital account to proactively plan for CETA compliance. And so we were in the process of doing that. And we'll continue because we believe CETA will be a very important and critical part in the future to our customers regarding rates and regarding bringing in renewables or bringing in whatever is required to meet the CETA requirements. As you know, by 2045, we have to be 100% carbon free.
So, Doug, does that show up in our budget?
We're working on that, yes. And in the budget, if you recall, we had that extra, I think it was $9 million for distribution batteries. And we were putting in, I think it was about $570,000 per year to meet those requirements. You remember that, Will?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, that's what that was about. I might not have the exact numbers right, but that was part of the budget.
Is the rulemaking complete? As I understand it, the rulemaking will be complete by the end of the year. And although we have a draft, which everybody thinks that's what it's going to be. So we've, this account would address rulemaking as well as our interpretation of the legislation. Is that right?
Well, yeah, if you recall in the Baputa meeting last week, they talked about that.
Yeah, that's the reason I'm asking the question.
Yeah, and it sounded like the rulemaking, even though they didn't believe that they were complete, that it will be completed, but not that it will actually match what needs to be done, because I think Baputa was saying they didn't really feel it was 100% complete or reviewed and responsibly completed. So anyway, I think the important thing that I would like to emphasize is that we as utility are ahead of most of the other utilities that really haven't looked a whole lot into CETA compliance and budgeting for that. We have, so that's one. I think that we'll work out and will be a minimum impact to our customers compared to a lot of the other utilities. If I can move on to the next one here, ensure a reliable supply. Let's see, let me move your box out of the way here so I can see it. So you can see what comments were made from the customer. We kind of integrated into our comments here. I took out the first part of maintain service level agreements just to allow us to put more into this column here. But it basically says the same thing, continue to strongly support local internet service providers, the ISPs, and Sean Delplane and Steve and that group is working hard, and Sean works hard with the ISPs to support them, and we plan to continue to do so. We also added the number three there, continue to strongly pursue grants that can expand broadband throughout our county in a cost-responsible manner. And we added that in that way, such that still has to be cost-responsible. Some of these grants might give us money for some of the infrastructure, but then as far as the O&M, it doesn't support us, and we have to be careful of that also. That's another important part of it. And then number four, continue to expand our broadband for services that increases access to Clallam County underserved communities. Now, Dave, I was in conversation with Dave this morning, and he was the one that suggested we point out about the unserved and underserved communities. So that blue part was added over what you had seen previously, but I thought that was a good addition there. So that does read as it says, continue to expand broadband for our services that increase access to Clallam County unserved and underserved communities. And what's that basically saying too is we're going out and we're serving our infrastructure like at our substations. And if anything can be gained for the communities around that, or if the ISPs can pick up off of that, you know, that's fine. This is not saying that we're going to go out and provide these services to all the underserved and unserved and underserved communities, but it says if we're out and we expand in those areas, we'll certainly look for possibilities to help the ISPs and help the locals and the communities there. So, Dave, I thank you for that. Let me move on to the next one here. This is under practice environmental responsibilities. In the picture of excellence, I think the comments was made about looking at new technologies too. And so this is where this pops up. The district meets all environmental regulations and advanced technologies that are at the lowest cost, or the lowest cost, to take the word add out. And the reason there is the customer had said that we need to look at these advanced technologies. And so the idea here is that we have been, and we put this in our picture of excellence because we do believe it is important, but we still are looking for the lowest cost. In our belief, looking at the lowest cost and meeting all the regulations. The customer was saying that all we did was kind of saying that we're going to meet regulations and that we should also be looking at, you know, new technologies. So this is trying to emphasize the fact that we will be looking at advanced technologies, but at the same time, the customer is always at on top on our mind as far as making sure that the costs are involved to keep the lowest cost for the customers too.
You know, I think you need some kind of qualification in there, proven technologies, because it's that old adage of being the first to the cheese or being serial number one. There's an element of risk in that.
How about this and advanced proven technologies?
Yeah, that sounds good.
I added proven in there. Okay. Oops, I just hit save. I probably shouldn't have done that. Well, okay. Looks like it'll let me advance. I was afraid it wouldn't let me advance. Okay, then moving on to the next one here. This one is in our Manage Our Resource portfolio. And number five there in yellow, we've taken that out because this has been completed. That was developing revised net revenue model on a monthly basis using NISC monthly and reporting. So we have completed that. We've added six and seven, and I believe this was done during our budget meetings with you. If not, anyway, it was added here. Develop capability to meter time of use for electricity. And the next one, number seven, monitor emergent technologies and conduct periodic financial feasibility analysis necessary to decarbonize the power supply, including EV charging, battery storage, SMR, solar and microgrid technologies. So we are working on all those technologies, and this was something that was brought back up in the past by, I think Jim was pushing this or mentioning this in the past, and it was a good comments to add to make sure that we are looking at all these technologies. So let me move on here.
Just one comment. Since we're 98% carbon free, maybe that should just read to reduce carbon in our power supply.
Say monitor emergent technologies and conduct periodic financial feasibility analysis to decarbonize. I think we're saying that, Will.
Well,
to decarbonize. The power supply.
Could be interpreted either way. Let's leave it alone. That's fine.
Yeah, I think it goes beyond just decarbonization. I mean, as prices come down in these new technologies and so forth, carbon or no carbon, these have the potential of lowering rates and increasing our resilience in the local area. So I think it's you know, we should pursue this no matter what CETA says or anybody else.
Well, this is where the part of that sentence says, monitor emergent technologies and conduct periodic financial feasibility analysis. So I think we've got the feasibility and the decarbonizing both in there. So I think we're covered there.
Yeah, I'm good.
Is that okay, Jim?
Yeah, we're almost carbon free, but that doesn't mean that these technologies can't save us money. We know the hydro system is getting more and more expensive. These technologies, some of them except maybe SMRs, but who knows, are all getting cheaper. And so we want to always be bringing in what's best for the customer, beyond just what the requirement might be for decarbonization or something.
How about if I do this? I just add the word and in there.
Yeah.
So in other words, does that do it?
Yeah, I think that, yeah.
So we're doing the financial feasibility is necessary and we're decarbonizing. Okay. And the last one before I discuss something else here. Is strategic plan, be financially responsible. So we've added a few things here. We've added in the big gaps to fill, need to evaluate cash reserve policy and related recommendation for 150 to 100 day reserve. We just added that 180 depends a lot on CETA and COVID and a lot of things that are going on that might be a necessary increase in our cash reserve. And then number 7 and 8 over here says create a low-income CETA program to mitigate rate impacts. And we're looking into that. That'll be an important part of going forward. And then number 8, scoping plan for utility scale qualifying CETA project and corresponding restricted cash accounts. So that, again, has to do with CETA. So these are kind of advanced things that have come up recently in the event of CETA. So that kind of covers all of the comments that except for one. Excuse me, I've got a cough here. I don't want to cough in everybody.
No coughing.
Yeah, no kidding. So that takes care of what customers had asked that we felt was good to include into our strategic plan going forward. We felt that some of the other things that were mentioned, we had already taken care of in other meetings and talked about it pretty extensively. So the last thing I wanted to bring up was a comment that Jim had made, and he made it last year, and I remember it. But I thought we had taken care of it last year, but possibly not. Jim was suggesting that we add another objective called external. And we talked last year a little bit about that. We do have external working relationships that we have in our plan with APPA and WAPUTA and all these organizations and local communities, stuff like CETA or EDC and Chamber of Commerce. And so this happened kind of pretty much before the meeting. So Jim, I guess I'll ask you if you would explain that a little bit further, and we can do see what commissioners think and what you're looking for.
Well, it's pretty typical in a strategic plan that you have internal and external strategic objectives. But that aside, yes, there are elements of externalities embedded in these different things. But I think it's an imperative for a PUD to have an external focus that we're scanning and looking at what's out there 2 to 10, 20 years out in terms of a variety of things. You mentioned, you know, CETA, that's a regulatory. We've got legislative sort of covered by WAPUTA, but maybe, you know, some of those things, you know, we could simply just put them under another heading. But I think more importantly, given the emerging importance of energy technologies, grid modernization, and all this kind of stuff, BPA situation, aging hydropower, I think we ought to recognize that there are significant changes in the future, not to mention, you know, new contracts. And yes, that's a, you know, we start the policy reviews that go on for 2 years in January with BPA, you know, all public process and so forth that we can directly engage in and should be engaged in. To me, it's important to say, okay, what are those? And which ones should we be paying the most attention to? Or what's our just scanning mechanism? How do we, you know, what are we doing as a staff and as commissioners to look out into the future and constantly bring things back in and say, how is this going to affect us, whether positive or negative? And to me, that's classic strategic planning.
Like you're proposing like a scenario planning type of activity, is that right?
Well, not necessarily scenario planning, but at least, I mean, it could turn into a scenario. It's kind of like looking out in the future, looking for things that could are could be beneficial or could be harmful to us, and then saying, okay, we better focus a little bit on this. And so whether you develop a little scenario for it or just an issues management process or let's just stay on it or, hey, maybe we better start having some meetings about this, but it's that's to be defined as you develop, as you see an opportunity or a threat coming in from the outside, and then what do you do to take advantage of it or to mitigate the damage it might cause?
Well, we could look at something maybe called opportunities and threats, which you just mentioned, which is something that you do look at when you're looking at strategic plans.
Yeah, that's kind of built in, but we could call it out. That's broad enough to, you know, predicting the future is always wrong, but we can keep an eye on it.
You have a comment there, John?
Yeah, I would say that under risk management or minimizing risk, we can build that objective out to include much of what Jim is talking about. That would go along with what we're doing in our scoping, and we'll continue to do on our scoping analysis like we did in September. So I think the risk category is where that might be best placed, especially if you're looking at scenarios, what-ifs, and a conscientious effort to do an analysis of the risk and opportunities in the future.
Yeah, it's kind of a SWOT analysis that, you know, we normally would do and that we've done when we put together the strategic plan. We can go ahead, Jim.
Doug and John, too, I think we had the same discussion summer before last, I guess, at Forks when we got into this, is looking at the risk set, and that's got some stuff in there. It's mostly reactionary, though. But I guess I'm just trying to get something out that causes us to be more proactive. You know, our strategic plan has a lot of stuff that I would call, you know, really good management objectives and so forth. From an internal perspective, I think it's got a lot of merit there. I just think we need to have an explicit external focus, whether it be a technology issue or climate change or whatever it is, and just, you know, identify it. And some of these things that may be in some of these other areas you've already got, so it's just a matter of repackaging them and saying that's an external one.
Okay, we can look at that. I mean, I would suggest, Jim, that you know what the format is on our strategic plan. We have picture of excellence, you know, gaps, strategic initiatives. I mean, maybe you could take a shot at that under external risks, if you want to call it that, or opportunities and threats, and send it our way, and then we can massage that and work it into a separate one, and we can see whether the other two commissioners are okay with that, and if that works or whatever. How's that?
Okay, so you want me to write something up, and is that it?
Jim, why don't you just give that verbiage to Doug, and he can bring it back, and we can go from there. It's kind of hard to do this on the fly.
Well, I didn't mean right now. Well, if Jim would just sit down and go over those four or five things that we have, you know, the picture of excellence, the gaps, the strategic initiatives for a certain objective, whatever he thinks it should be called, then we can, if we get that in writing, we can massage that and work on it and see if it's something that all the commissioners are agreeing to.
All right, so when are we trying to get this done?
Well, we're looking at hopefully getting approved the second meeting of December. But, I mean, there's no concrete rule that has to be done there. We can shoot for that, and if you can get something to us and we can massage it and get it back to you and the other commissioners, you know, that'll work fine. If not, you know, we do it in January. I think you said okay, but you were muted there, Jim.
I said yes. I'll see what I can do there. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so, Will, this is a little unusual, and when we talk about actions for staff, now we've got actions for commissioners.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, just don't let that go too far.
I hear you.
I'm open to ideas from the staff here. If anybody listening has got some thoughts here, that have them call me.
Okay, good. Thanks.
Is that all you had, Doug, on that item?
Yes, that's all.
Okay. All right, moving on to correspondence communications. The first one is the V22 rate case update. Sean, are you doing that one?
Yeah, sure, Will. I think most of you probably saw Ryan's email from WAPEG, but in case not, I was just going to give a few highlights from that email. BPA held a workshop on the 12th regarding its intent to include some level of revenue financing for capital projects in its proposed power and transmission rates for the VP22 rate case. And during the discussion, BPA relayed a few things to note. The first one is that they're hinting that the initial rate proposal for Tier 1 is going to be 0%. As you remember, for the BP20, BPA also had a 0% increase across the board on average. However, Clallam's increase was 3.38%. So even though across the board it's going to be 0%, how that breaks down to other utilities is yet to be seen. And if it's anything like last time, we could be looking at a 3-4% increase in Tier 1. But Ryan said we'll know some more as we get more into the rate case. They also intend to include about $95 million per year of revenue financing for capital projects on the power side when they're setting Tier 1 rates. And this is to preserve their borrowing authority. BPA is saying that it can afford this due to the expected increase in secondary sales. But Ryan's proposal that he would like to pursue is if BPA would apply that $95 million to reducing the Tier 1 rate, then they could have a rate decrease of about 4.5%. So that's the position that they're going to take, and we'll know more on that as he drafts that.
Well, if you're not financing capital out of rates and you're pushing the limit of your borrowing authority, what are they proposing?
Yeah, Ryan didn't get into that in his email. I don't know if you saw it, Will, but basically, I think their preference is that they max out their borrowing authority. At least that's how I was reading it.
Well, but if they do that, then rates will just go up in the future. So, that's a discussion for WAPEG.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Well, any way you cut it, it's going to go up.
Well, that's what I keep saying. Yeah, that's what I keep saying.
They're just moving the buckets around.
So
exactly, yeah.
Well, what about the any spill surcharge or reserve surcharge? That's the reason we ended up with a 3% increase last time, although they did defer some of that.
Yeah, those are all built into the Tier 1 rates. And according to the QBR that they just had, it doesn't look like they're in any position to have a crack or a financial reserve surcharge for the BP22 rate case. But all that, I guess, could change.
Yeah.
On the transmission side, they're expecting a rate increase of about 11.5%. 7% of the increase would be due to the expiration of the current BP20 rate case settlement. And then 4.5% of the increase would be to provide $45 million in revenue finance capital to also preserve transmission's borrowing authority. As I said, WAPEG will have more to come on this, but the early position from Ryan's perspective is that BPA has their wires crossed because transmission services has a higher rate of consumption on the borrowing authority. And Ryan is suggesting that transmission services should absorb the lion's share, since they're the ones consuming twice as much as power services. So Ryan's going to draft up a letter to VPA with his recommendations that will be reviewed by all the WAPAG members before he sends it. And so when that gets done, we can revisit this and either support or not support his position. And that's all I had, Will.
Okay. Thanks, John. All right, our next item is the, I'm not sure I pronounce this, Touchy Energy / Energy Northwest Solar Offering. John, you're going to discuss that? I think you're muted, John. I hear you talking down the hall.
Oh, yeah, never share your screen before you unmute because it's hard to find. But, yes, in the board packet is a solar energy offering from Touquet Energy Services, and this is for the property in the vicinity of the Columbia Generation Station that I believe has been actually one of our customers had inquired about. So this is more details on prior discussion. The proposed solar farm will be up to 100 megawatts, and I understand between 70 and 100 megawatts, and the anticipated cost of power at the bus bar would be under 40 megawatts. Let me see if I can change.
$40 is not firm, right? That's not backed up.
No, it's without batteries. So it's basically intermittent solar. And I need to switch my sharing screen, and I'm going to try that here. Hopefully I will. Okay, do you now see a table?
Yes.
Okay, so basically, Touquet estimates that the cost of the generation is going to be between $30 and $40 a megawatt. And this is actually very consistent with our analysis done over the summer, where we estimate there's portions of eastern Washington where generation for solar only can be done for something like $38 per megawatt hour. And that's without battery backup. Because of the relatively low cost of this, we wanted to touch base with BPA and see what their charges would be if we were to participate. And to the best of our knowledge, there will not be an effect on transmission, meaning they're not going to charge us, would not charge participants with additional transmission capacity charges. But unfortunately, for something called retail support services, we anticipate that if we were to offtake the supply, BPA would hit us with about a $16 per megawatt hour charge, basically filling in the gaps for when the solar was not generating. And if we use these numbers, it looks like the cost per megawatt hour delivered would be between $50 and $60 a megawatt hour.
Can you explain in a little bit more detail what BPA really means by retail support services? If you currently have say hydropower and it's there now and you're picking up some of this solar, but then when the solar's not there, they're going to charge you an additional $16 over what the going rate of, what, 32 here or 36?
That is our understanding. We touched base with Marcus and some other individuals at BPA, and they have an analysis sheet that they've used for solar interconnects. And customers who take load from solar farms. And based on the last quote on the most similar project that we could find, and that was something called Sunny Sun 27 Average Megawatt Solar Project from fiscal year 2017. Updating those numbers to BP 20, BPA is not a quote, but BPA anticipates the RSS charges will be on the order of $16 a megawatt hour. Now, there's a lot that goes into that, and it's, you know, really outside of our experience and knowledge, but I believe it has to do with having a reserve available for periods of time when the solar is not available. So the end user customer is going to be charged what amounts to, normally for our load following customers, we're charged roughly $6 for power services. They will charge us $16 for the power received from intermittent solar.
So this would be, what you'd be getting there would be, we would continue to be load following, and this would just be transparent, and Bonneville would do all the shaping and load following functions, ancillary services, and so on. Is that what we're saying?
Yeah, that is correct, Will, and I'll go over that a little bit more in our on the next slide. But, yes, unfortunately, it's going to be $10 above the BPA Tier 1 Hydro, primarily for the RSS shaping, load following, and all the services they provide for us in that respect. Now, if we were a slice block customer, it would be completely different.
Thank you.
Yeah, if you look at Rick had a comment here in the chat and saying that this is basically a firming charge, BPA firming charge.
Yes, that's yeah.
Okay, so the other drawback for off-taking is, as a load-following customer, we are contractually limited to supplying only above rate period high watermark load. And for this fiscal year, we only have about 1.6 megawatt, average megawatt, that we could off-take. Now, that will increase over the next couple fiscal years to something a little under 4 average megawatt once we include our Packwood share. So the most we could take from a demand, from an average megawatt, and probably a demand portion, is no more than 3.5 average megawatts or peak megawatts during the production. And for most billing months, the offering will have a negative impact on the district's BPA load factor, meaning except for the summertime, where it actually improves the load factor by supply during the daylight hours. For most months, it will actually increase the load factor, and this will result in fractionally higher BPA supply unit cost. And it primarily has to do with our adverse load factor, meaning the demand charge is still going to be there. We'll take less kilowatt hours from BPA if we substitute an amount for the solar, and BPA will effectively charge us more for their supply, not within the rate period, I believe, but in potentially in future rate periods. So at this time, we do not intend to express a project interest, primarily to relative cost and potential rate impact. Probably the biggest reason is our contract constraints as a load-following customer. We couldn't off-take a whole lot of the solar because we're committed to the Tier 1 Hydro. And I would consider the most important factor being that right now, according to the latest carbon accounting, we're 5% carbon, and we do not expect to be at risk with respect to seed over the next 10 years. So we would hope to see better opportunities from a financial standpoint as costs come down in the future for solar, and maybe BPA will actually reduce the firming charges that they would assess for intermittent solar.
Well, this is kind of a recurring theme. There's been developers come to Energy Northwest numerous times to look at this 300 acres. And so far, none of them have been able to put it all together, probably for the main reasons that you're reporting here. There may be an opportunity in the future. There's an additional 1,600 acres there that other developers may take advantage of or whatever, but that would be out into the future, and there's a lot of hoops to be jumped through for that. So there may be other opportunities coming up that fit our needs.
Well, you know, BPA is making it hard for them and us in terms of affordability here if with this $16 a megawatt hour firming charge. I think that's something we, you know, PUD should look into, because it seems to me there's some double counting going on in there. If you're going to, you know, when you buy the power at 36 from the hydro system, you're buying those ancillary services as well. And so I'm having a hard time figuring out $16. That's a lot.
It confused me a little bit, Jim. How do you firm the solar at the bus from the bus bar without going and getting involved with an aggregator or something to back that power up? There's going to be a cost associated with that.
Well, there may be. There probably is. But, you know, we're talking about all this, you know, modernization of the grid and everything. And, you know, in the way that the energy imbalance market has to work with these instantaneous changes and so forth, and that's all, you know, part of the analysis too, it seems to me that $16 is a lot to be charging for something like that, because you are going to end up paying, you know, the going rate for hydro as that backup resource, and that rate includes a lot of these same kind of cost in them. But, you know, it's kind of hitting me cold, so it's something I think we should, you know, probably ask around about. Maybe I'll talk to WALPAG about it.
So, John, would you say this is a more appropriate offering for a slice customer, or is that just looking at the structure of this?
You know, as far as off-taking a more significant portion of the supply, yes, we're limited to above rate period high water mark. I will say this, there's a lot of private utilities in Washington that are currently at 40 to 50% carbon, and they have a 2030 requirement to be under 20% carbon. So I would think that an offering like this would probably have a better opportunity today than it would have prior to CETA, because they're going to have to get their non-carbon supply from somewhere, and this type of solar farm is one option that they can arguably reduce their carbon content.
Now, as I read this, participants in Energy Northwest get first crack at this. Is that the way you understand it, John?
That is correct. We're high on the priority list for interest. I thought that we might convey that we're interested pending the RSS analysis, but I'd be a little bit concerned about conveying interest and giving a false sense that, you know, we were quasi-committing or very interested when we anticipate the BPA charges to make it cost prohibitive, as well as the fact that as load-following customer, there's a relatively small amount that we could offload or offtake.
Yeah, I think that's a more ethical way to approach this. We don't want to give a false indication of our interest. So,
John, I think you said we can tell them we're a little queasy about this, given the BPA charge, the extra charge.
Well, what I can do, I can send an unofficial communication that our preliminary scoping suggested that we were going to be hit with a high RSS charge, just as a, you know, for their information to make sure that we're correct and what BPA is telling us is in fact correct for this particular solar farm.
That's helpful. Yes.
Did you, just an observation, they keep saying that this thing is at Richland. Well, it's really not. It's on the Hanford Reservation. They're trying to, maybe there's negative connotations of being on the Hanford Reservation, but it just seems a little strange.
Yeah, I don't know how they conveyed it. As a matter of fact, I'm not sure entirely if Energy Northwest is co-sponsoring this, or if they're just highlighting and advertising.
No. When this came to the executive board, it was just a letter of intent from the developer and contingent on getting participation and off-takers. So there's no – Energy Northwest is not sponsoring or anything. We just kind of providing mechanisms so that they can go forward if it appears to be viable. So,
well, I think I read in the documentation, though, that this particular acreage actually belongs to some slightly, it may not be DOE property anymore or something like that. In other words, it may not be technically Hanford Reservation.
Yeah, I think the 300 acres is belongs to Energy North, well, is leased by Energy Northwest. The additional 1,600 acres, I believe, is the city of Richland and Benton collectively. So they would have to cut a separate deal for that. But since Richland is already a participant in Horns Rapid and Rapids, they probably would be interested in hearing more story. But that's all out in the future. That's not on the table right now.
And, Will, I've added this, asked John to report on this, just to let you know, as we have been telling you, that we do look at all these situations, and those that are that we feel the commissioners be interested in, we bring it forward to let you know that we have evaluated and we are looking into them.
Okay, so what I'm hearing is, John, you're going to do a bit more investigation and then bring this back, and we'll talk about it further. Is that right?
Well, the way I understand it, Will, is that I'm going to send probably an email to convey that our preliminary scoping suggests that there's going to be an RSS charge on the order of $16 a megawatt hour, and to confirm that is the case, or get something back that would give us more confidence in our costing analysis.
Sounds good. Any further discussion on that one?
Not unless there are commissioner questions.
Okay, well, let's move on then. Commissioner reports.
Okay, I'll go first here, and there's been a number of association meetings in the last week with WAPUTA, and from the Energy Committee, Energy Northwest reported, in addition to reporting on that Tucci project, which I won't go into because John covered it pretty well, they did mention that the Horn Rapids Solar Storage Training Facility, which is a 20-acre, 4-megawatt solar photovoltaic installation with a 1 megawatt of battery storage was energized the end of last month, and they had their ribbon cutting on the 10th of November. So that's the project that is a joint venture between Energy Northwest, Telco, and the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. The IBEW is going to use that as a training facility for their apprentices and journeymen to learn more about installing and maintaining battery storage. So that project got started a couple of years ago, and completed pretty well on schedule, as I understand. Let's see, as far as the SWIM chamber meeting I attended, the construction industry earlier this year reported that, you know, lumber, of course, has been going way up, although that hasn't really slowed down residential construction around here, so we're going to get plenty of new hookups. And the price of lumber is now starting to drop, not precipitously, but at least softening enough that hopefully it'll continue to do that into the new year and give builders and owners a little relief on the cost increases. One of the takeaways from the Waputo Water Committee meeting last week is that the price of pipe has gone up quite a bit and is continuing to rise. And I know Skagit PUD says that they're probably going to push some of their projects, their larger projects that were planned for 2021 out beyond that, and hope the price of pipe will be lower when they go to do it in the future, because it's starting to raise the eyebrows of some utilities and, you know, force some other ones to cancel projects. Also discussed at the water meeting was some of the utilities that got CARES funds. I should mention that not all counties gave utilities CARES funds, since utilities didn't get any direct federal aid from that resulted from the COVID bailouts. The utilities have been pretty much dependent on their counties to give them a share of the CARES funds that the counties got. Well, fortunately, we did get CARES funds. A number, I'd say half the PUDs didn't, but among the ones that did, several reported that they'll end up having to give those CARES funds back because they weren't able to distribute them all within the deadline set for distribution. And I know when Clallam PUD, during the first weeks after we got the CARES funds, we were finding it difficult to get people to make application for various reasons. I think we were advertising in the newspaper and newsletters, radio, and perhaps some of the most needy people don't read newspapers or listen to radio. Some of the other PDs said that some of the potential recipients thought there was too many strings attached, even though other than proving need, there really aren't strings attached. And there was a number of reasons given why they haven't been successful. But I know that here that we, our staff had to get creative to make sure they got outreach to the people that needed it. They were doing door hangers in areas where there was concentrations of people that were worthy recipients. And so kudos to the staff here for doing that. And I think Sean mentioned at the last meeting, we're real close to distributing all of our $45,000 that Clallam County Commissioners gave us. Other things with the Water Committee is that, probably should give you a little background on this, but there's a Ninth Circuit Court ruling on replacing culverts with bigger culverts or bridges to allow salmon to move upstream, and this has affected the Olympic Peninsula quite extensively, and Clallam PUD, among all the PUDs, was one of the first to really feel big impacts from this, with having to relocate primarily water utilities, but also electric utilities. And Tom Martin has kind of taken the lead in Waputo, and a few months back, John Counts, the water master at the PUD, at the Waputo, he started a working group for culvert utility relocations, and the ruling affects utilities that are in the Puget Sound watershed and everywhere in the Olympic Peninsula and in the Chehalis River watershed. So it's not all PUDs by any means, but the initial meeting for this work group was back on October 5th, and at that time, they identified, you know, where the problems were in general and put a map together and everything. And the big issues here are, number one, that the transportation component, the bridge building culvert replacement part of it, is able to be grant funded in many cases, whereas the utility relocations aren't able to be funded. So it's pretty much going to be put on the backs of the rate. It is being put on the backs of the ratepayers to pay for these relocations. And as I said, up till now, it's been mostly water utilities, but certainly in Clallam and other utilities, you're going to see a lot more electric relocates and even some broadband. So the other thing is that WashDOT hasn't coordinated all that well with utilities to get utilities involved in the project. So consequently, utilities are being forced to, you know, jump in short order into getting these projects done without much planning, and that's adding additional costs to them. And the third thing is utilities don't get mitigation credit for any of these projects because they're court order projects. Now, there are some that are not court order projects, but and there is a movement afoot to try and get mitigation credit for those. So anyhow, the Jefferson County PUD, Mason PUD, Kitsap PUD, Skagit, and Clallam so far are the ones that see big money associated with these. I know Jefferson's in process of replacing the relocating utilities for the Marrowstone Bridge. That's costing them over $1 million. And then most of the other counties in the affected area haven't really joined the work group yet, but I would expect they will in the near future. So this is something you're going to hear a lot more about in the coming year. And the goal is with this work group is to try and get some relief. I think October 5th, they put a strategy together to try and get WashDOT to be a little more cooperative. And during the next month, they're going to compile more detailed cost information so they have that when the legislative session starts January 11th, so they can start trying to, you know, work towards getting some relief on this. So other than that, I guess since this is my final commissioner report, I should probably just kind of take a snapshot of where we're at. And I guess one thing I can say I've noticed since I became a customer 17 years ago is that the reliability and infrastructure of the Clallam PUD has improved dramatically. And I noticed that some of the recent raids on the website from customers were circulated among commissioners from the outages that came from storms earlier this month. And I think one customer implied, or maybe more than implied, that, well, the outages are fewer and they're shorter, and, well, maybe the weather's getting milder or something. And I guess I would have to say that lived over in Western Washington for over 30 years, and I would say there's been winters that are milder than others, but there certainly hasn't been a trend towards milder weather, so I'd have to give all the credit to the PUD and the improvement of infrastructure and the improvement of process. And when I say infrastructure, I mean not just the physical plant infrastructure, but the information technology, which I've worked with a lot of information technology groups over the years. And Clallam PUD's information technology group is second to none. They do a fantastic job and continue to do it. So between that and customer service, keeping their customers happy, I think I'm very positive looking forward that that infrastructure and that reliability is going to continue to improve. So that's all I have for today.
Well, I want to thank you for those comments for the employees. We appreciate all that, Dave. That's very nice. Appreciate it. I do want to mention, too, you mentioned Tom taking a lead on that group with the water group. And they looked at him for leadership and guidance on that because we were one of the first PUDs that have been impacted by all the changes that regarding our fist passages. So thanks, Dave.
Okay. As a customer, Dave, you'll have to come back and attend our meetings and keep us straight.
Yeah, it's getting a lot easier on Zoom, right?
That's right. Jim, you want to take it?
Yeah, let's see. This is going to be a little tricky because some of the stuff that I the meetings I've been to primarily were the Bonneville Power Administration's quarterly business review and, of course, the WPUDA meeting. So a lot of what I was going to say has already been covered, and I'll try to weave through this without repeating too much. In terms of the BPA quarterly business review on the 17th, you know, that's a pretty high-level thing, and the actual workshop 2 days later I was not able to attend because that was the same time WPUDA was going on. But I've been trying to look through the charts, but there's 50 pages of charts, and it's kind of tricky to decipher it all. But anyway, I think it was important. At this QBR, John Harrison, the acting administrator, was on the phone, I mean on the call, and he actually gave a very thorough, you know, point-by-point list of issues and so forth that they were working on, and I thought it was actually a far more informative kind of brief statement from him, whatever you want to call it, than we've been getting in the past from Elliot. And I think it might just stem from the fact that Harrison has just been there for so long and he knows so many more, so the depth of a lot of these issues very well. Some of the things that he pointed out, he started off almost with the talking about the CRSO environmental impact statement that, you know, was signed here a couple months ago. And he wanted to say that the EIS was meant to be was not meant to stop the conversation, but basically to, you know, carry on with it since it was such a, in fact, it's true, it's a programmatic EIS, not a site specific. So anything that's in there has got to be dealt with in terms of specifics later on. So he did say he was disappointed in that there's going to be more litigation on this. But it's not surprising since so many people are pointing out the holes in the EIS and you know, the things that are just inconsistent with the data and the conclusion. He talked about the four governors process that came out of the Columbia Basin Partnership. That four-year process leads to another four-year, well, whatever, with the governors here. They have not been invited. BPA has not been invited to participate, but he said they're very willing to discuss and dialogue with those folks as time goes on. He also noted that the EIS was provided a solution for salmon recovery and hopefully would not increase rates. I think it's I don't know if that's really going to be true or not. There's two issues with that. Is that one, a good chunk of our rates is because of the Fish and Wildlife Program. And number two, the money spent to date really hasn't led to any kind of recovery. And so, and you know, and if, and I mean, yes, we haven't let stuff go extinct, but according to the Power Planning Act, it's not just extinction, it's about recovery. And that's what the Fish and Wildlife Program is supposed to get at. And that's not really happening. Particularly in the Snake River and the upper, you know, reaches of the Columbia, it's you know, there's some progress in the lower tributaries, but not the main stem and Snake. Okay, so the other thing he talked about was the IPR2 draft topics, and you know, we went through the IPR process, and this is where they basically came up with. It looks like we're going to, as we go into the rate case, we're going to have a 0% average that Sean talked about a minute ago, but could change. But that's still subject to them discussing and dealing with impacts derived by the CRSO process, the EIS that I just mentioned, COVID, and also capital forecasts and expenses that I think they're still debating. So that's most of what Harrison covers at the QBR, and I guess it's already been said that maybe here is that they came out better in terms of revenue than the original forecast, and that was because of higher flows in the river in July and August and higher prices. So they got lucky there on that one, and it generated another 100 or 200, depending on how you count the pluses and minuses in terms of revenue. So that's what led their reserves to be higher, and we're not hovering right there at the surcharge line anymore. Okay, in terms of WAPUTA, we had the Education Roundtable had some good presentations on public disclosure rules and so forth like that. I thought that was really good. Another one was about hiring a general manager and some of the lessons learned from different PUDs, and they went around with all the PUDs and or most of them. All of them, and Will spoke and covered that since I wasn't around during the transition. But I thought, a couple of the key comments is that if you hire a headhunter, make sure you get a referral for a headhunter. And before, it seems like people have wasted money on headhunters for general manager positions. And then and that the current GM should be working on a transition plan as a continuing effort. And I know, Doug, you've mentioned that, but maybe we ought to talk more about that at some point and see what you're thinking. Okay, that's already been covered. We also, in terms of legislative updates and stuff like that, we had a lot of discussion around, what was changing in the legislature because of the election, and the bottom line is not a whole lot, maybe a little bit more to the left in terms of policy approaches and so forth. Let's see, what else is interesting here? We already talked about the CETA rulemaking, going to be finished by the end of the year. And they also went through WAPUTA went through some of the things that they thought they were able to influence in terms of that rulemaking to date. And I think there's, let me see if any of them are worth getting into the details here. Okay, so the next, maybe skip to Gina Mossbrooker, who was in the House there, in the State House, spoke, and she covered a lot of different things. The next session will be a totally virtual session. She says the Capitol is locked down except for the members and staff. I think the key point she made was that the state budget has a $2.4 billion hole in it, and so there's going to be a lot of hard choices there in terms of different programs, whether you're talking tax increases or cutting agencies and stuff like that. Not sure how that would affect us, except that it makes it harder for the state to support any initiatives that may require state funding that will help PUDs. She said there'll be a very short list of bills because of the virtual process. It's just too difficult to go back and forth on much of this stuff. I don't know if she pointed out or somebody did, but Chelan PUD proposed legislation to exempt certain things from the Public Records Act and the request that they get. There's some loopholes in there that are really causing some pain for some folks in PUDs. We already talked about culvert impacts. Dave did. Let's see what else. And then George spoke, and somehow in George's presentation, they laid out the budget for WAPUTA. And John, I mentioned this to you Friday when I was in there, and it turns out that the table I was looking at, I thought I actually had on my tablet, but I don't think I do. I think it was something they showed on the screen. But what I saw was, and Sean and Doug, maybe you know about this, is that they had a table that showed all the dues of all the PUDs for WAPUTA. And beside Mason 3 and us, everybody else's percent of their contribution to WAPUTA went down except ours. And ours went up by 4.9%. And I asked why, and they said it was based on our input to them, and basically it had to do that our customer base had grown and our revenues had increased over the previous period, whatever that period is, year. And so anyway, that one caught me a little off guard, and but maybe Sean or John, I don't know what input you provided to WAPUTA or something, but just heads up on that, that, you know, it, our rate is going up 4.9% in terms of dues.
I can answer that, Jim, if you want me to.
Sure, yeah.
So they request every year what our annual number of customers, our number of meters, and our total revenue for the previous year. And we provide that to them every year, and that's what they base our rates off of. But I can double-check the numbers we provided and make sure that they're accurate.
You know, I suspect our numbers are accurate. I'm not sure about everybody else's. So anyway, don't worry about it too much. If you're satisfied with the data, I'm good with that. I just thought it was kind of funny that everybody else's except us and Mason went down.
Well, I was surprised when I saw the table because Ponderay had gone down almost 50%, which I think they lost some big load with a customer of theirs up there, so that might be part of the reason. But
they did. They lost a big load.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we are supplementing that, I guess.
I won't be so surprised next time. BPA's Scott Wilson, he's sort of their marketing guy, talked to us. He didn't really have anything more to say other than what was already covered in the QBR in the comments that I've made and Sean, you've made. Let's see if there was anything else. Nope. Energy Northwest, I guess you guys have already covered all that. So I guess that's all I got.
Okay, thanks, Jim. Well, let's see. I started off. NWPPA conducted a post-election forum, and this is the first in a series of these. As all the election stuff dies down and we get into legislation and so on, there will be future forums conducted. And it's kind of interesting that 100 people were in this virtual meeting, which is one of the larger ones I think I've participated in. And they were limiting comments, and all of their comments was public power issues, but not just for Washington, of course, the whole energy, the NWPPA footprint. They had McGuire Whitney there, who are lobbyists, and most of what they talked about we get on the news, and I think we're reach saturation on elections, but they made some predictions. Depending on how Georgia pans out with the election of the two senators down there, that they don't think there will be a lot of big climate change legislation on the federal level, and Biden will be somewhat limited in what he can do. But they think that the states will step into there, and there will be on a state-by-state basis some climate change things. I think Washington has pretty well taken that to the nth degree, so I'm not sure we're going to see a lot more there. Let's see, what else are we doing? They thought items like the Columbia River Treaty, water temperatures and that sort of thing would kind of go by the board since there's not a lot of emphasis in that. Following the lobbyists, we had a staff panel, and these were congressional staff from Patty Murray's office, from Kathy McMorris Rogers, and then one from a congressional staff member for a congressman in Oregon. And what they were taking was kind of a middle-of-the-road approach, which was somewhat surprising. They seem to think that since 30 congressmen will be up for re-election in 2022, and those are in districts that either voted for Trump or lean towards Trump, that will kind of moderate what's possible in the House. So, and I won't go much further into this because they had a lot of opinions and so on, but the way things are in flux right now, I think opinions are not worth a lot, our predictions. What was interesting at the end of it, there was pretty well consensus that some degree of virtual meetings are here to stay, which means that we're going to have hybrid meetings with in-person and some people calling in. And they seem to think that there was a preference for virtual participation. I'm not sure I share that, but we'll see how it comes out. Then I attended the NOAANet board meeting, and I won't go through all the financials and payments and so on. They all look pretty good. In fact, they're building reserves, and reserves are already up 196% over 2019, and they're operating within the budget. Their debt ratio is 1.35, and they must meet a 1.1. Third quarter revenues were up 15%, 9% operating costs, and overhead costs was up 4%. The main feature of that meeting was the resolution 0190, which approved the revenue bonds. That's the $25 million which they've gone out to utilities and asked for participation to back up those bonds, which was a condition of the bond issue. At $25 million, $10 million will go to capital, and the remainder will go to pay down debt, refinance and pay down debt. They're going to pay off all their debt and just rely on the bond issue. The bond end up costing about 3.5%. Of the utilities participants in NOAANet, 30 participants are approving that bond issue. In fact, it passed the board unanimously. A lot of discussion about COVID activities, state funding. They're talking about the state is talking about funding for communication needs, and there's a term for this. Basically, it's going to be in libraries and going to be in community centers. And the logic there is that students, rather than coming to a hot spot and sitting in their cars, which does sound, you know, with the weather and so on, that they will provide new locations for them to participate. The O&M report included they've upgraded the speed of the NOAANet system. And I guess one of the big items was that the 911 system went down for about an hour, which is a big deal because that's medical and police and so on statewide. It wasn't NOAANet's responsibility, supposedly. It was the secondary provider, which was Comtech. And Comtech will be subject now to reporting to FCC, the Federal Trade Commission, the state, and there may be fines and penalties levied because of that. They didn't really have a good handle on what caused the shutdown, since it wasn't on the NOAANet side. But it was only down for about an hour. There was no loss of life associated with that, so that's a good thing. And well, that's enough on NOAANet. I think NOAANet's looking pretty good with that bond issue. We'll see how their projections are going forward. Then we all participated in a state auditor's exit meeting on the 17th. We got a squeaky clean audit. A lot of positive comments made about our staff and our management, which is a good thing. And so I just want to compliment our management and our staff for. We've had a history of clean audits, and it's something we want to keep going forward. There were not even any letters or comments or recommendations. It was very, very, very clean audit. Then I went to attend the WAPUTA meeting. I think we pretty well covered that. It was kind of interesting, that Chelan thing, that they were getting public information request on employees then those employees, some of those employees that they supplied that information about were victims of cyber crime. And so that's the reason they're pushing for that. And that's not just to PUDs, but also many state agencies or staff are getting attacked cyberly, if that's a word, because of information that's being provided to folks that are got bad intentions. Talked about the Public Meetings Act, the exemptions. It's kind of interesting when Chelan took that to the state, to the Public Disclosure Commission, they were told that the initially that the public's right to know outweighed the safety of their employees, which is that was kind of a cavalier way of stating that, I think. A lot of discussion about legislation on HR issues. It's just really a legal quagmire. So I think I hope we've got sufficient legal assistance to deal with all those things. And it centers around this paid family leave and so on. Then there was in the roundtable, I'll just couple little items I don't think were mentioned. Talking about hiring general managers. Skamania, which is a fairly small utility down on Columbia, they had an opening for a general manager, and they got 30 applications. 30 applications. That's amazing. Then a number of utilities talked about, like Jim mentioned, using a search firm, hiring somebody, and they only were able to retain them something like 7 months. And so that's, let's see what else we got here. I think we pretty well covered all the rest of it. Public Works Board has gone back to ask for additional funding. They are kind of emphasizing these digital connectivity, digital equity is a term that was used quite often. I think maybe what we'll see is the same thing we see with CETA, that folks that can't afford broadband will receive some kind of assistance to do that. Energy Committee. Yeah, that there was discussion about the CETA rulemaking by Department of Commerce, which is pretty well complete. It's first I'd heard this, but an agency can go back and recommend additional legislation, which Department of Commerce did. And it was kind of funny what they came up with. They said that there should be legislation to pretty well electrify everything, and should adopt a California model for going forward, which I guess that would require further discussion, I think. Also in the Energy Committee, you talked about the legislative agenda. There's cap and trades on the table, carbon taxes on the table, low carbon fuels is on the table. Given the movement in the legislature, a lot of those will happen. It seems to be the consensus that the main goal is to increase revenues to address this hole in the budget that Jim mentioned. I'm going to stop right there, I think. Oh, there was one other thing. The cap and trade, interesting point, that if we were able to sell credits, sell carbon credits as a utility, then the Department of Commerce would determine how we could spend that money, which is kind of strange to me, but that's... The carbon tax, I didn't think, there's no legislation at this time, But there is an initiative group pushing for a carbon tax, which that comes around every election cycle, and there's always an initiative in that direction. The other thing is that most agencies have to do a cost-benefit analysis in their rulemaking process. Commerce does not have to do that, which is something that probably WAPUTA needs to latch on to. Just as a sideline, Liz Green was elected to the PPC Executive Committee, mainly supported with members of WAPUTA. And a number of commissioners either chose not to run or were defeated in elections, so there seemed to be we're losing a lot of experience there. And there were many more women elected to commission seats. So. And that's it. That's all I have. Any questions, discussion? Okay, moving on. We've got staff reports. Do we have any staff reports?
Just one thing. I asked Sean to give an update on our CARES. Dave had mentioned it, but he'll give you an update there.
Yeah. So as of last week, we have fully exhausted all $45,200. We dispersed 189 total grants for an average of $239.15 per customer. So, as you know, last week, Governor Inslee announced another $15 million that might be directly available to utilities. So I'm watching that and waiting for information to see if there will be further funds. But as of last week, we fully exhausted our CARES funds from the county. So that's exciting. And I know Shanda and her team in customer service worked very hard on making sure that we went through all the money. As Dave pointed out, Nicole and a few other employees canvassed apartment complexes, leaving door hangers, and we went above and beyond trying to hand out all the money, but we did it, and as of last week, it's done. So thanks for bringing that up, Dave. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I was going to ask, what's changed? We were having problems there, but I think you just told us. So...
The biggest challenge for us was we were the first mouse to the cheese, and so we had more restrictions from our county than what other PUDs had put on them. And if we were going to do it over again, or if we were able to get additional funds, we would definitely push to restructure things a little bit different and not have a constricting matrix like we had with small dollar amounts. So hopefully there will be more funding available for our customers, and we can devise a new program once we get that.
Okay. Thank you, Sean. Okay, board action items. I think, Jim, you have an action item. And then John is going to go back and get some more information on that solar on the Bonneville cost of using the solar. Now, is there any other items that I may have missed? Okay. All right, we'll move on to comments from the public.
So we had a few extra people join us. So if anybody wants to make a comment, you can *6 to unmute and give me your first name and I'll put you on the list.
Richard.
I'm not hearing any others, Will.
Okay, Richard, go ahead.
Well, it sounds to me like you were looking for action items for the staff and for the commissioners, so I thought maybe I'd help you out in that regard.
Now, wait a minute. This is not an assignment, is it?
Well, that's what I had in mind, as a matter of fact. Yes, yes, yes.
Okay.
Indeed. Well, so in as much as PUD is going to be negotiating in the near future for the next 20-year contract with BPA, I personally would like to see ratepayers involved in that process and making a few calls around. Most people are pretty curious about what that process is going to be, in as much as most of us haven't been through such a process. The timeline would be interesting. Who's involved in the negotiating process would be interesting. How would Column PUD be treated differently this time because we no longer are a member of PPC? And, of course, as you well know, ratepayers pay the bill, and so they have a vested interest in this process. So the assignment is, could there be an educational program to educate guys like me who want to know just how this is all going to come down and take us through the process step by step during that long period of time that's going on, plus an opportunity to make public comment whenever it seemed like it was appropriate. So that is my statement and my assignment. I hope you'll take it to heart. Thank you for letting me testify.
Okay, thanks, Richard.
Hey, Will, let me say something here. Richard's got an interesting question and point. And, you know, it's been, I don't know, 15, 18 years since the last time we went through this. And as I've researched and talked to Bonneville and WALPAC and even PPC, you know, what we have to remember here is everything about this these contracts is a public process. Anybody, PUD, private citizen, can go to BPA, all the IPRs, all this stuff in the future. These negotiations, in fact, are public process. And so we ought to remind ourselves here is that this is all supposed to be transparent, all supposed to be public. But I think it would be beneficial for the public to understand where what phase we're in with things like, you know, for starting January is the two-year policy setting framework, and that's going to drag on. But there are people that ought to know that that's going on. And maybe, I don't know if Sean, you want to do this, maybe you can do a little presentation, or we could have Ryan Neal from WAPAG, you know, join one of our calls one time and walk us through this. They're very familiar with this, you know, what the role is of the PUD versus an association like WAPAG or PPC, what, you know, the challenges for them are. You know, like PPC's got lots of different utilities. It's difficult for them to just say, oh, yes, we're going to represent Clallam PUD in the negotiation process. No, it's not really that way. Anyway, I think it would be, it'd be good for, all the, you know, new commissioners, whatever staff, I don't know, I know Doug, you and John, and, you know, you were here when this probably went on, what, 18 years, 17 or 12 years ago, whatever. But, I think Richard's got a good point.
Yeah, I guess I'm looking at my calendar here. I guess I was here as well. Okay, well, we can talk about that and come back with a work session or something to address those issues. Any other public comments, Sean?
No.
Okay. All right. If we no other business come before the commission, we stand adjourned.
Thanks.
Great Thanksgiving, everyone. All by yourself.
Yeah, Dave, thanks again for everything.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for the great 2 years with the PUD.
Okay. Yeah. Hey, it'd be nice to see you sometime, Dave. So.
Oh, yeah. I'm not going to disappear.
Well, I mean your face. I haven't seen your
All right.
face. All right. Okay. All right. Don't get too sentimental here. All right. Okay. Bye-bye, everyone.